Ted shook his head. Mike grinned. Not me. I'm used to women looking up my ass. That's 'cause you're all ass, dipshit. Sarge looked back at Livingston. Let's get him rounded up. We need to kick this off as soon as we can. Ian stuck his head back in the tent. Livingston immediately told him to go find Jamie and the others he wanted on the mission. Ian nodded and waved for Ted and Mike to follow him. Doc walked out of the tent and made his way to the CP. Sarge and the officers were standing out front.
Hey, Captain, who's responsible for hygiene around here? Doc called out.
Sheffield looked at Livingston.
Sergeant Harmer was pressed into service for that duty.
Where is he?
Livingston stuck his head back in the tent and told a corporal there to go find him.
He'll be around shortly. What's up? Those two have dysentery. I want to see the latrines and where you're getting water from and how it's treated and whatnot. Are the civilians running their side of camp any differently?
No. We all use the same SOP for camp hygiene.
Huh. Well, let's try and fix the issues. I'd prefer if you keep it to just two cases.
I agree. We'll be swimming in a sea of shit if it spreads, Sheffield said. What's the treatment for them?
They aren't in too bad a shape. They need plenty of clean water, and if you got any Gatorade or anything similar, it would help.
We have some of the powdered stuff, Livingston replied.
Well, that's good. We'll water it down. It'll help them replace salts and whatnot. Doc, Mike, and Ted are going to do a recon of the camp. I'd like you to stay behind and try and get this issue under control, Sarge said.
No problem, Sarge, Doc replied.
A tired-looking black man in his late 30s walked up.
You need me, Lieutenant?
Harmon, Doc here said two of our people have dysentery. He wants to see the latrines and some other stuff. Show him whatever he has to see.
Not a problem. Glad to have someone around who knows what they're doing, Harmon replied. Come on, Doc. I'll show you around.
Ian led the way through the camp, giving the guys the rundown on Jamie.
You guys will like her. She's funny as hell.
He waggled his eyebrows up and down.
And not bad in the eyes, either. She's the best shot in the unit. She's also a really good tracker.
Sounds like my kind of woman, Mike said with a grin.
Ian laughed.
She'll eat you for lunch, dude. Don't say I didn't warn you.
On the far eastern edge of the camp, they came to a sandbag bunker. Ian called out as they approached it.
Hey, Jamie, you in there?
A petite brunette stepped out of the entrance. She looked dwarfed by all the body armor and the PazJet helmet on her head.
What do you want, Ian?
You've been volunteered for a mission. Come with us.
Who are they? She asked, jutting her chin in Mike and Ted's direction. Mike immediately noticed her brilliant green eyes.
Your new best friends. Grab your stuff, come on.
She paused for a moment, not sure whether to believe Ian or not. He was notorious for playing jokes. Stepping back inside, she quickly reemerged with a pack slung over her shoulder.
Where are we going?
For a walk in the woods.
Mike stuck out his hand, which she shook.
I'm Mike, and this is Ted.
We're going to take a look at the FEMA camp at the old bombing range.
Sounds like fun. Is it just us?
We need one more person. I was thinking of getting Perez, Ian replied.
Jamie nodded her head.
Grumpy old fucker would probably like a trip out of here.
Can you go find him and meet us at the CP?
Yeah, I'll round him up.
She jogged off. Ian, Ted, and Mike headed back to the CP.
Dude, she is hot as hell, Mike said.
Ian laughed.
Tell me about it. She's a tough chick, too. Redneck as they come. Don't waste your time, though. Nobody has ever scored that one.
Real nice, Ian. You just threw down the gauntlet. Now he has to try, Ted said, shaking his head.
Challenge accepted, Mike shouted from behind.
Ted shook his head. Ian laughed.
You better wear your Nomex underwear, brother, 'cause you're gonna go down in flames.
Ted let out a loud laugh.
I can't wait to see this. Doc looked down at the small trench.
This is the latrine?
The visual was almost as bad as the smell wafting out of it.
Yeah, I know, it's crude, but it's the best we can do.
Doc looked at the slot trench, which was woefully unmaintained. It was obviously being used to urinate into as well.
You know, everyone's supposed to cover their waste when they use it, right?
Well, yeah, but some people don't. We gotta fix this.
I'm all ears if you know a better way.
Let's go talk to the lieutenant. Harmon led the way back to the CP. Livingston looked up as they approached.
Well, what's the diagnosis, Doc?
He asked.
We need to do something soon. What you guys are doing to manage waste is not helping matters around here. It's probably why those two are sick.
Sheffield grunted.
Tell me about it.
That damn latrine is nasty.
I only use it when I absolutely have to. I'll take my chances and piss in the woods.
Well, that's another problem. You can't be doing that either. You've got over 100 people here. If everyone pisses in the woods, this place will be a cesspool.
Doc paced back and forth. We need to redo the latrine and make a urine pit where everyone goes.
He looked at both officers.
Everyone.
Livingston and Sheffield both nodded, admitting their guilt in not following the standard procedures.
Just tell us what you need, Sheffield said.
Huh. I need some empty drums, 55-gallon ones, and some pipe, too.
We've got a few empties that used to have fuel in them. As for pipe...
Livingston trailed off, then looked at Harmon.
We got any pipe you know of?
Harmon shook his head.
We need some sort of aggregate, too. I doubt there's any gravel lying around,
Doc said, trying to think of an alternate.
No, no gravel, Harmon replied.
Doc looked sideways at Livingston.
How about cans? Like soda cans or food cans?
Ian and the guys walked up.
Need cans?
We've got a stack of empty cans and aluminum trays from squad meals. Would that work?
Ian suggested.
What the hell are you going to do with that? Sheffield asked Doc.
I crush the cans, wad up the trays, and use them as filler for the piss pit.
Harmon, you need to find a spot for the new latrine. Get all the cans moved over there and have someone crush them all.
Will do. We'll get started right now, Harmon said, nodding at the captain.
Sheffield dismissed him.
Sarge stood off to the side during the conversation, as shitholes and piss pits didn't much interest him.
Looking at Ian, he asked,
Where's this Amazon goddess hunter of yours?
She's on her way. She's rounding up the other guy we need.
Sarge looked at Ted.
What's your plan?
I figured we need to go out and poke around for a place to set up an observation point. We'll do that tonight, and then keep an eye on them tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow night we'll move to the opposite side of the camp, see what we can make out.
You going to take both buggies?
No, just the hyena, less tracks.
Sounds good to me. Try and get a head count, equipment, whatever you can see.
Will do. In that case, we need a ride down to the cabins to get the buggy, Mike said.
I'll take you guys down in the boat. I need to get some stuff from Morgan, Doc volunteered.
Works for me. Soon as your help gets here, you guys head out and grab all the ammo and grub you want, Sarge said.
Jamie walked up with another uniformed man. He was probably close to 50 and had a haggard, hard look to him. Ian smiled at the two.
Hey, Perez, you want to go play hide-and-seek in the woods for a few days?
Ian asked.
Perez licked his lips and looked side to side.
Who's it?
They are.
We don't want to be it in this game, Sarge said flatly.
Damn, I hate the hiding part. I prefer to do the hunting.
There'll be plenty of time for that, Sarge replied.
You guys got all your shit?
Ian asked.
Perez held up a pack.
Everything I own.
Ian and Sarge looked at Jamie. She turned to the side slightly to show the pack on her back.
Oh, you know me. I got my makeup, some bras.
A slight smile started to crack Sarge's face when Ian said, "Shit, Jamie, you wouldn't wear any makeup if you had it." He paused and made a show of looking at her chest. A bra, however. "Fuck you, Ian," she said, kicking sand into his face. Sarge was smiling broadly now.
"Oh, I like her. She'll fit right in with these misfits."
"They're your problem now," Livingston said with a smile. Sarge looked at Doc. "Get him down the river, Doc." After a quick check to make sure everyone had all the ammo and food they needed, the group climbed into a Hummer, and they headed for the boat ramp. Doc took charge, navigating the aluminum boat upriver toward the cabins. Being on the water quieted the group. All conversation ceased as each person took in the view. The lilies swaying in the brown water, the old cypress trees, and the beards of Spanish moss hanging down in the current had a relaxing effect on everyone. When they were almost to the cabins, Mike spun around in his chair. "When we get there, we should talk with Morgan. He knows the area and may be able to give us an idea of where to go to scope out the camps." Ted had his feet up on the outboard. Without turning around, he replied,
"Great minds, my friend. I was thinking the same thing."
Chapter 4 Tabor sat behind his desk, his usual post. He was camp administrator, and under the current circumstances, it was a job he was thankful to have. He was warm, dry, and well-fed. He didn't have to deal with the scum running around, and he didn't have to grub around in the dirt to get his food.
"Hey, Ed!" he shouted at the open door.
Ed's head appeared in the open door.
"Yeah, boss?" "Get Niagata up here. I want to talk to him." "You're going to give those new detainees to him?" Ed asked with a smile.
"Yeah, I talked to him, but they both gave me the same line. He'll get the truth out of him. No one is out just riding around these days."
Ed nodded. "Sure thing," he said, quickly disappearing. A knock at the door diverted Tabor's attention from the stack of papers before him. Looking up, he saw Niagata and waved him in. "Have a seat." Niagata came in and sat stiffly in the chair across from him.
"What can I do for you?" he asked.
"I've got some people detained who I need you to question."
Expressionless, Niagata nodded.
"And what were they doing when you captured them?"
"Our security guys caught them driving on the road," Ed said, from where he leaned against the door.
"I see. And this is a cause for concern?"
"They were armed, that's one issue. And they were driving a vehicle, which means they have fuel. They were out on the road using that precious fuel, so whatever they were up to must have been important to them. And that's what I want to know. I also want to know where they live. There may be a rogue element at play. We can't take any chances."
Niagata took in the information. "How exactly would you like me to accomplish your request?"
Tabor raised his eyebrows.
"Do what you do. I just need to know that information."
"In that case, there are a number of methods I can implement. I'll begin with intimidation."
Tabor started waving his hands in front of him.
No. I don't give a shit what you do. I just need answers to my questions. You figure out how to get them."
The faintest tension appeared in the corners of Niagata's mouth.
"I understand. How many are there?"
Ed passed a form over Niagata's shoulder.
"There's two, Calvin Long and his son Shane. You'll have to start with Shane. The boy's got a little rough with Calvin. He's probably got some broken ribs."
Niagata reviewed the document, then looked up.
"When would you like me to begin my interrogations?"
Tabor shrugged.
"As soon as you can."
Niagata nodded and rose from his seat.
"Is there any final disposition you would like for them?"
The question confused Tabor.
"Huh?"
Finally, Niagata smiled.
"Do you want them to be alive when I'm finished?"
Tabor sat there, slack-jawed, looking at the man before him. Ed answered his question.
"Doesn't matter, so long as you're confident you've got the info we want."
Ed looked at Tabor. "Right, boss?" Tabor waved a dismissive hand at Niagata.
"Yeah, sure. Now get to it."
Niigata bowed his head slightly.
Thank you, sir. I'll let you know the results. He turned and quickly left the office.
Ed came in and dropped into the chair. He looked back over his shoulder to ensure Niigata was gone.
That's one creepy bastard.
Tabor sat in his chair, leaning back with his hands behind his head.
Where'd they get that freak?
Remember Abu Ghraib?
Yeah.
Well, he's the one you didn't hear about in the news. Rumor has it, he extracted more info than anyone.
Tabor rocked in his chair.
Sick fuck looks like he likes it.
Oh, he does. You should see him work. Takes people apart like a mechanic would pull an alternator.
Better him than me, I guess. I'm glad he's here.
Me too. Now let's hope he gets the information we need.
The sound of the bar and the door sliding open echoed throughout the building. Jess was curled on the floor, trying to stay warm. Her eyes jerked open at the sound, but the darkness told her nothing of the visitor. Meanwhile, in her cell, Fred was sitting with her back against the wall and her hands resting on her knees. She turned her face toward the din. There was one other sound that instilled more fear in the girls than anything. The jingling keys. In their time spent in detention so far, one of the few pieces of information they could put together was that it was the cruelest guard who would signal his entry by jingling his keys as he walked down the row of cells. Jess inhaled sharply as the sound of keys became audible. The building was as quiet as a tomb, so any sound was magnified. The sharp clanging of the keys reverberated off the walls, accompanied by the sound of boots crunching sand on the cold concrete floor. The jingling continued down the row, followed by the sound of metal on metal, as a key slid into a lock. The door opened, the dry hinges grinding against one another. When the light hit his face, Calvin turned his head. It was an intensity he'd never felt before. With his hands cuffed to his waist, he couldn't raise them to cover his eyes. Even though he couldn't see the men, Calvin heard them enter the cell. He tried to brace himself, but there was nothing he could do to prepare. He was grabbed by both arms and jerked to his feet. A painful moan escaped him as he was forced to stand. The fire tearing through his side caused his knees to buckle.
"Get on your feet, damn it!"
With as much effort as he could muster, Calvin moaned.
"You fuckers broke my ribs! I can't!"
With even more force, the two men tried to pull him to his feet. The pain was so intense, Calvin completely collapsed. He could feel his ribs popping.
"Son of a bitch, what now?"
"Hey, get the doc over here to see if they really are broken," one of the men said.
The men stepped out, and the door slammed shut. Calvin lay there trying to get his breath. He could only take small gasps of air. A full breath was a wish at this point.
"Dad! Dad! You all right?" Shane called out.
He had found his way to the door and had his face pushed into the edge. The man that just left Calvin's cell stepped over and kicked the door.
"Shut up! Come in here and try that shit with me, asshole!" Shane shouted.
Silence answered him. Shane moved his face around the door, trying to determine if the man was still there. After a moment of silence, he was answered with a whisper.
"Don't worry, boy. Your time is coming."
Shane jerked his head from the door, surprised by the proximity of the voice. He recovered quickly and yelled out,
"Big talk on the other side of that door! Open it up, cocksucker!"
Jess shook her head.
"They have no idea what they're getting into," she thought.
Soon, more voices came into the building. The door to Calvin's cell was opened once again, this time without the blinding light that had accompanied the earlier encounter. Before he could even react, a sack was pulled over his head. He could feel hands running over him and something being pushed down his shirt, then an incredible coldness on his chest. A woman's voice told him to take a breath. He tried, but all he could muster was a gasp.
"Deeper?"
Calvin shook his head and managed to say,
can't.
A set of hands pressed on his side, causing him to wince and moan. After the brief examination, the people left, leaving the sack on his head and slamming the door. Though muffled, Jess, Fred, and Shane could hear the guards and medics discuss Calvin's condition.
He's got at least two broken on one side and possibly some more fractures, one of them said.
We're supposed to interrogate him today.
He can try, but it'll probably kill him.
Another man spoke up.
Whatever, get the other one.
Hearing those words paralyzed Shane momentarily. His mind raced. I'm not just gonna sit here and wait for them to take me. He felt around the door, trying to see if there was a handhold, but came up with nothing. He knew he couldn't run at them. But then he remembered an old football drill. He squatted down in front of the door, reaching out to make sure he was close, then took up the position of a lineman, his hands on the floor and his knees bent. With his feet shackled, he had to keep them side by side, but he hoped he'd have enough leverage for what he planned. As the key slid into the lock, he squeezed his eyes tight. The door started to swing open. Even with his eyes closed, the spotlight bore through his eyelids. Shane launched himself through the door. However, it was wider than he anticipated, causing the guard to be standing farther away. Shane's shoulder hit the man's knees. He managed to knock the man down, but he fell directly onto Shane's back, the spotlight crashing to the floor. The guard quickly recovered and drove an elbow into Shane's back again and again, taking all his breath away. Shane lay on the cold concrete, trying to get air into his lungs.
Thought you were smart, didn't you, you little shit?
A hood was quickly pulled over his head, and he was grabbed roughly by the arms.
Get up! Get on your damn feet! One of the men shouted.
Shane was finally able to get a breath and managed to stumble along. As a door was opened, the warmth of the sun washed over him. Even through the hood on his head, he could see the sunshine through the cloth. As he was pulled along, he marveled at the feel of the sun on his body. For a moment, he was elsewhere, but only for a moment. Another door was opened, and he was dragged inside another structure. The two men forced him into a chair, then spent several minutes undoing his restraints and securing them to the chair.
He's all yours, one of the men said. Keep an eye on him. He thinks he's pretty smart, the other said.
Shane's head snapped forward as one of them slapped him in the back of the neck. Shaking off the insult, Shane rotated his head. The fabric of the hood was thick, and he couldn't see anything, but turning his head allowed him to focus his hearing. His other senses were also more acute. The place had an antiseptic smell. It reminded him of the nurse's office from his elementary school. The room was silent, but he knew someone was there. Shane wanted to say something, but he decided to wait for whoever was there to speak first. Instead, he focused on controlling his breathing and trying to relax. He was worried about his dad, and rage was building inside of him. They hadn't done anything to deserve this. Was it illegal to be driving down the road now? Even if it was, it certainly didn't justify all this. They hadn't bothered anyone. Some of their group members wanted to take the fight to the feds, but Calvin had counseled against it. He assured them the fight would come to them, but that they shouldn't go looking for it. Unfortunately, when it did find them, they were caught completely by surprise. After an uncomfortably long time, Shane jumped at what sounded like a chair scraping across the concrete floor. Footsteps followed, and he listened as this person moved about the room. Despite his efforts to remain calm, his breathing began to increase, sucking the sack in with every inhalation. After a moment, the hood was snatched from his head. Shane closed his eyes against the light. The man who pulled the hood from his head was balling it up, his back to Shane. As he tossed the hood onto a small table, he began to speak.
Shane, my name is Radon Niagata. You may refer to me as Niagata.
He spun around and leaned back on the table, crossing his ankles. Niagata smiled and began to speak again.
You and I are going to have a conversation. I will ask you some questions,
and you will answer them.
As he spoke, Shane was trying to remember what his voice reminded him of. Then it dawned on him. He sounded like Sulu from the original Star Trek series. This realization caused a small smile to creep across his face. Niigata noticed immediately and smiled back.
Have I said something that amuses you?
The smile disappeared immediately.
No, just an old memory is all.
Ah, memories, yes. We all have them. Maybe we can talk about some of yours.
Shane didn't respond. He simply stared back.
A scowl wrinkled Niagata's face.
I hear your father is not well.
Pity.
But that is what brought you and me together, isn't it?
Shane shook his head.
Not well? That's what you fuckers call it when you beat a cuffed man? What happened to our rights?
Niigata smiled again.
How quaint.
I assume you are referring to your oft-misquoted constitutional rights. I am certain you realize we are operating under a different set of rules at the moment.
Shane snorted.
Yeah, I've seen your rules in action.
Then we can skip the pleasantries and move ahead, Niigata said, picking up an instrument from the table behind him.
Shane's pulse immediately jumped when he saw the scissors. As Niigata moved toward him, he struggled against the restraints to no avail. Without saying a word, Niigata began to cut his shirt off, the blade of the instrument cold against Shane's skin. Niigata jerked the tatters of the shirt off him.
What the hell are you doing? Shane shouted.
As Niigata knelt down at his feet, he began to speak again.
Tell me, Shane. What do you know about interrogation?
Shane watched in horror as Niigata began to cut up the left leg of his pants.
Niigata paused and looked up expectantly. I know it's mainly psychological, Shane stammered as Niigata snipped through the waist of his jeans.
Very deliberately, Niigata moved to the right leg.
Very good. You were both right and wrong.
Trembling, Shane asked,
"Why are you doing that? What the fuck?"
"We are establishing the basis of our relationship," Niigata said. As he stood, he snatched the flayed jeans out from under Shane. Shane let out an audible gasp, looking down at his exposed chest and legs. The room was cold and caused goosebumps to rise. He was thankful he still had his underwear on. In an effort to stop Niigata from going any further, he started to talk. Fast.
You haven't even asked me anything yet. Why are you doing this? You don't know I won't cooperate.
Niigata turned and laid the scissors on the table, much to Shane's obvious relief.
Good point. But you can't fault me for thinking you would be resistant to answering my questions.
Calvin laid on the floor of his cell. He knew they had taken Shane away, but there wasn't anything he could do about it. He was in so much pain. His sides were on fire. With much effort, he was able to get himself up into a sitting position. The effort required to do so was intense, and he sat panting against the wall. Once he caught his breath, he called out.
Hello?
His voice was weak, and he wasn't sure anyone was even around to hear it. He called out again.
Is there anyone here?
Fred and Jess both heard him and moved toward their doors. Fred answered him in a loud whisper.
Yes, we're still here.
Calvin looked around, unable to see anything in the blackness.
Where'd they take my son?
We don't know, Fred answered.
Jess sat at her door, wringing her hands. Whatever was happening surely wasn't a good thing.
Will they bring him back?
Calvin asked.
I hope so,
Jess whispered. To herself more than to Calvin. Fred leaned against the door.
I'm sure they will, she said unconvincingly.
Calvin's chin dropped to his chest as tears started to roll down his cheeks. How could it be that one day ago they were free, and now his son was going through God knows what? Shane was tense, waiting for Niigata to start questioning him. But the man was in no hurry. He leaned against the table and stared Shane in the eye. After a moment,
Shane noticed the small stand behind him, turning. Niagata gripped the stand and pulled it around the table. The small stand was covered with a cloth. Niagata positioned it in front of Shane, pulling off the cloth to reveal an assortment of medical instruments and tools. Shane stared at the implements lying before him. He started to feel lightheaded, and his ears began to ring. Niagata looked over the items on the tray, inspecting the occasional piece. "It's time to begin, Shane." Niagata paused and looked at him. "How we proceed is entirely up to you at this point." Shane's eyes moved back and forth from Niagata to the tray. His chest was heaving, as he was nearly hyperventilating. "Let's start with the obvious. Why was your group on Highway 40? Shane's mind was racing as fear crept in.
"I didn't know driving down the road was illegal. You guys just started shooting. We didn't do anything wrong."
Niagata inspected the tray, then picked up another pair of scissors. Without looking up, he said,
"You didn't answer my question."
He looked at Shane.
"I do not like to repeat myself, so please, do not make me."
Shane licked his lips, looking at the instrument, but said nothing. Niagata smiled and stepped toward him.
"Remember how you said interrogation was mostly a mental exercise?"
Niagata leaned over and swiftly cut the band from one side of Shane's underwear, causing him to jump.
"What the fuck, man?"
"You still haven't answered my question," Niagata said, as he snipped the other side, leaving the front of Shane's drawers lying limp in his lap. Shane was entirely off balance now. His mind was running away, the fear of the unknown taking over.
"We were just out for a ride. We met some people, and we're headed home," Shane shouted.
Niagata leaned back against the table and crossed his arms.
"Very good. Who did you meet?"
Just some people. I didn't know them."
Niagata smiled again.
"You have a pretty good poker face, Shane. It's a shame your eyes betray you."
"Huh?
You looked left, which tells me you made that up."
Niagata stood up and turned to the tray.
"It's not your fault. It's involuntary."
No, it's the truth. I didn't know them."
It was technically correct, but Shane didn't know how to convey that. When Niagata turned to face Shane, he was pulling a pair of latex gloves on his hands.
"Let's say that's true. You did not know them. Then your father, Calvin, he must know them."
He let the glove snap against his wrist.
"No, he didn't know them either."
"How many people did you meet?"
"Only two that I saw."
"So, you think there were more?"
Shane shrugged his shoulders.
"I don't know, maybe."
Niagata stepped forward quickly, leaning over so his mouth was beside Shane's ear.
"It only gets worse from here."
He snatched the remnants of Shane's underwear out from under him. Shane yelped as a cruel smile spread across Niagata's face. Chapter 5.
Thad and I were sitting in camp chairs by the fire. He was stirring the pot of slurry. After the wood ash soaked in water, the lye was leached out. Now it had to be reduced.
"How do you know when it's done?" I asked.
"There's a test for it we can do in a few minutes," Thad replied.
Jeff and Danny walked up carrying fishing rods.
"We're going fishing while you Girl Scouts make your soap," Danny said.
Jeff started to laugh.
Thad looked up and shook his head. Rolling my eyes, I said,
"Go ahead, yuck it up. But when we're done, I'll know how to make soap and I can catch fish."
"Good. Then there will be twice as many people around here who can make soap," Jeff replied, laughing.
I looked at the pot bubbling on the fire.
"Thad, would that stuff burn your skin?"
He lifted the stick he was stirring with. The thick slurry sloughed off in thick strings.
"It might,"
He raised it back, as if to swing it. Let's see. Danny and Jeff looked like two of the Three Stooges as they pushed and shoved one another and ran away. Thad looked up, laughing. Serves them right. Damn straight. Should have slung it at them. I would have, I said with a chuckle. Taylor and Leanne walked over. Dad, can we take a walk in the woods? Taylor asked. Without looking up, I replied, Not right now. You guys need to hang out around here. I'll go with you later. Come on, Dad. We've got our guns. There's no one around here, Taylor protested. Leanne shifted her weight from foot to foot. You don't know that, Thad said. I nodded at him and stood up. I know you guys are bored, but we can't chance it. Just because you have guns doesn't mean you're protected, as we have already seen. I felt kind of bad adding that last line, but it was true, and I hope they took it for how it was meant. The last thing I wanted was for one of them to get shot again. Look, why don't you two go work in the garden plot over there? We've got to get those plants in the ground soon. The girls looked at one another. It was obvious they weren't impressed by the suggestion. A little hard work never hurt anyone, Thad said with a grin. If we do that, will you promise to take us for a walk later? Leanne asked. The past few weeks, she had been staying inside the cabin, sleeping late into the afternoon. A little bit of fresh air would do her good. With a smile, I replied, Sure. They turned and headed for the small plot. We watched as they took up the rake and hoe and set about chopping at the ground. I looked at Thad. Why is it you can get them to do chores with a little suggestion, but I can't pay them to do it for me? It's that third-party thing. You know, other people can get kids to do things they won't do for their parents. I read about it somewhere. Well, third party, I hope you stick around for about 10 years. Thad's head rocked back as he started to laugh. Little Bit came over and wanted to help the girls, but it was quickly obvious that none of them were very interested in what they were doing. I'm bored, Little Bit said. Taylor leaned against the hoe she was using. Yeah, this sucks. My head popped up. It what? She gave me an innocent smile. Can we do this later? I sighed. Yeah, go see if your mom needs anything first, though. I looked at Thad. So much for that. He laughed. Yeah, didn't last long, did it? The sound of a motor at the river snapped us back to reality. Instinctively, I reached for my rifle, which was leaned against the picnic table. We both looked downriver for the source of the sound. It wasn't long before Danny's boat came into view. We walked down to the river as it eased into the mud. Back so soon? I crowed. I shook Mike's and Ted's hands as they got out of the boat, followed by three others I didn't know. Morgan, Thad, this is Ian, Jamie, and Perez, Mike said, introducing them. Thad and I both shook hands with them as Doc got out of the boat. Well, to what do we owe the pleasure of this little visit? I asked. Looking at the boat and the load it was carrying, I added, Looks like you guys are about to stir some shit somewhere. I pointed at the pile of packs, ammo cans, and other gear. Y'all bring enough party favors? Yeah, we got a little sneaking around to do, Ted said. Mike smiled. What's a party without some noisemakers? Better not be any noise. That is not the point of this mission, Peckerwood. You better keep your noisemaker in its holster, Ted said. Mike rocked his boonie hat forward on his head, put his hands on his hips, and leaned back at the waist, pushing his hips out. You mean my noisemaker, or my noisemaker? He was smiling and bouncing his eyebrows up and down, looking at Jamie. Jamie cracked her knuckles. I see your noisemaker, and I'll field strip it. Her statement got a round of laughter. Thad looked at Doc. You gonna take care of these guys? Nah, I'm not going. I just delivered him here. He looked at Ted. If they do this right, they won't need my skills.
They're just supposed to do some surveillance on the camp, so we don't go in there blind.
Holy crap! They're going out without adult supervision? I asked, with a laugh.
That's what she's here for, Ian said, nodding over to Jamie. Jamie snorted. If you're counting on me to be the positive influence, you're in trouble.
Perez snorted.
Well, that's an understatement.
We all started to chuckle. It was clear that Jamie was a rough-and-tumble girl.
Hey, Morg, I need some pipe. I know you guys brought a bunch. Do you have any to spare?
Doc said.
Yeah, Danny's piled it up somewhere.
Where is he?
Well, he and Jeff went out fishing somewhere. What sort of plumbing you doing?
Doc rolled his eyes.
You don't want to know, really.
He looked down the river.
I'll go find them as soon as we get the boat unloaded.
I'll go get the war wagon, Mike said, and headed off toward where they were parked. We all pitched in and started to unload the boat. There was a mountain of ammo and supplies piled up in it. Some for us, and some for their mission. Mike soon rolled up in Sarge's wagon and started setting it out so it could be organized with the supplies. Once the boat was emptied, Doc got in and started it up.
Which way did they go? Doc asked.
I pointed upriver.
Last I saw them, that way.
Doc nodded and eased the boat out into the river.
I'll be back, he said.
Mike was bent over at the side of the buggy, pinning a saw to the hard mount. I kicked the back of his knee, buckling it.
When are you guys heading out?
He looked back with an expression that said, asshole.
After dark. And actually, we need your help. We want to go over the drawing of the camp with you. You know this location way better than any of us. We need all the details you can remember about the landscape.
Sure thing. Let me see the drawing. When you guys are done sorting out your crap, come over to the picnic table. Ted handed me the drawing, and Thad and I walked over to the table. I sat down while Thad took a seat in the camp chair and went back to stirring his slurry. The crew came over to the table and sat down. Mike looked over in the pot.
I was going to ask what's for dinner, but I'm afraid to ask now. That looks like shit.
He sniffed the air.
And smells worse. What the hell is that?
Thad chuckled.
It's soap. Or it will be.
Damn. You wash with that, and you'll smell worse than before you started, Mike said, scrunching his nose. Thad and I both laughed.
Hey, Thad, we got a couple of hours before dark, and it looks like this soap project isn't going anywhere fast. You think we could grill up a piece of that hog for these guys?
Sounds good to me. Let me get some more wood and some meat, Thad said, as he stood up.
Great. And if you don't mind, tell Mel we're going to have company for supper.
He nodded and headed for the woodpile.
You guys have fresh pork? Perez asked.
Yeah, we've got a few hogs. Butchered one recently.
Damn, fresh pig meat. I haven't had that in forever.
Thad's great in the grill, too, I said with a smile. Mike and Ted both nodded their agreement. Ted tapped the drawing.
So, what can you tell us about this place?
I spun the drawing around and started making some marks. I indicated where the antenna where we had met Calvin was, then marked the approximate location of the rear gate. I drew in the roads to the best of my memory. As we were discussing the access to the camp, the boat came back into view with Danny and Jeff on board. They climbed off, and Danny and Doc headed for Danny's cabin. Jeff came up and flopped onto the bench beside Jamie, looking at her with a big grin.
Well, hello. I don't think we've had the pleasure of meeting, he said with a wink.
Jamie cut her eyes at him, then scooted away. Ted rolled his eyes and smiled.
Jeff, this is Jamie, Perez, and Ian.
Still smiling, Jeff grabbed Jamie's hand.
Really nice to meet you.
He looked back and gave the others a curt nod. Ian couldn't help himself and started to laugh. Jamie couldn't take it anymore. She was a redneck girl, and so she was used to speaking her mind.
Fuck you, Ian, she shouted across the table and kicked out his knees under it.
Still laughing, Ian jumped.
What'd I do?
Jeff was resting his head on one hand, the elbow propped up on the table, still grinning like a mule eating briars. Being a single man, Jeff enjoyed the company of beautiful women, and we all knew from tales of his conquests that one in uniform with weapons was a real turn-on for him. This was classic Jeff flirtation style, embarrass the girl a bit, hoping that his charm would win her over. For her part, Jamie wouldn't turn her head in his direction. The look in her face told everyone she wasn't happy. Ian was enjoying it more than Jeff. You couldn't have smacked the smile off his face if you tried. While all this was going on, I was still trying to make notes on the map. Once I had given them all I could remember, I dropped the pen and stood up just as Mel and Bobby walked over with the two older girls. As they were introducing themselves, I checked on Thad in the soap, which he was tending to in between getting the cooking prepared. The pot of lye had cooked down considerably. "How much longer till we can get clean?" I asked. Thad lifted the stick he'd been stirring with, looking at the liquid as it ran off. "Might be there," he said. "How will you know?" He smiled and plucked a chicken feather from the cup holder in the arm of the chair he was sitting in. Dropping it into the pot, he explained. "This is a little test you can do to see if the lye is strong enough." The feather hit the lye, and the fine edges of it dissolved nearly immediately. Then the quill slowly dissolved. After less than a minute, there was nothing left of it. "Holy shit! It just dissolved the entire thing," I exclaimed. Thad smiled. "Yeah, it's some rough stuff. Ain't nothing to play with. But now, we know it's ready." What do we do next? The process was fascinating to me, way more than I'd expected. Now we add the fat and mix it up. "I'll go get it," I said, and headed for the cabin. We had rendered a bunch of it and kept it in a 5-gallon bucket with a lid hammered down on it. As I headed for the cabin, I looked around. Everyone was down at the picnic table talking. The older girls had made their way over to where Thad was. He was showing them the feather trick again. Little bit would like that, I thought, and looked for her. She wasn't in the cabin either. I looked around the grounds for her as I carried the bucket back over to Thad. "Hey, have you two seen your little sister?" "Earlier, she was playing with the dogs," Taylor said as she watched the feather melt. "That's cool," she said, looking up at Thad. "Hey, Mel, where's Ashley?" I called to her. She and Bobby both turned around. "Leanne, you were supposed to be watching her. Where is she?" she said as she looked around. "I don't know. She was running around with the dogs, and I didn't feel like following her," Leanne said. "Well, I don't see her, and I don't see the dogs either," I said, as I walked out toward the dirt road in front of the cabins. I looked back at Leanne. "You shouldn't have left her alone." Quickly, everyone was up and looking for her. With so many people in our group, we covered the area around the cabins in just a few minutes. She wasn't anywhere, and neither were the dogs. Panic was quickly beginning to overtake me as my heart began to race. "Where could she have gone?" Mel shouted as she ran from cabin to cabin. "It's not my fault," Leanne cried. "We'll go check the road. You stay right here," Ted said as he and Mike passed me. I nodded at them and headed for the woods on the east side of the cabins, behind the chicken coop. The chickens were back there browsing through the scrub, but no Ashley. Hearing my name being called, I ran out of the woods. "Go out to the road," Mike said, pointing. I turned and headed for the road as he ran past me. Ted was knelt down, looking at the dirt track. "What is it?" He was holding a small stick and began to describe what he saw. "Here's her print, and the dogs, of course." Pointing with the stick, he rose up and moved in a crouch. "Then, there's this," he said, pointing to a much larger track from what appeared to be a full-grown man. My heart sank. Mike came wheeling up in the buggy with Jamie, Perez, and Mel. Danny was right behind them on his Polaris with Doc.
Ted looked at me. Notice how it's only this track that leaves, plus the dogs? I nodded and said barely above a whisper,
Must have carried her off.
Ted nodded. Then Mel shouted, Mork! What's the matter? Where is she? I stood up as she ran up.
Someone took her. All we have are tracks.
What do you mean someone took her? She screamed. How could someone take her from right here with everyone around?
I don't know, I said, fear gnawing the pit of my stomach.
But we're going to find out, Mel, Ted said. I climbed into the buggy with Ted and Mike. Mel jumped in, too. Make room for me. Danny and Doc pulled up beside us.
We'll follow you guys. The girls are staying here with Thad, Danny said.
Mike drove down the road as Ted hung out the side watching the tracks. From the ATV, Doc was also tracking as Danny drove. They were going to the north, toward the paved road. If they got to the paved road, it would be nearly impossible to find them. My head was spinning as I thought of Ashley's smiling face. She was so little, so sweet. The thought of what could be happening to her made me sick. Tears began to run down my cheeks. I looked at Mel. She was a total mess. I wiped my face to try and give the appearance of certainty that we would find her. I put an arm around her, and she laid her head on my shoulder.
We're going to find her, she said, more to herself than to me. Don't worry, babe. We will.
Several times we had to stop and get out to look for the tracks. For whatever reason, they wandered off the dirt road from time to time. At one of these spots, Ted found the tracks heading off the road. Ted, Mike, Mel, and I followed them off the road for about 15 feet. We could clearly see Little Bit's footprints in the sand, then a wet spot.
Looks like someone took a leak, Ted said.
Mel started to cry again.
She's afraid to pee in the woods.
She looked at me. You know she doesn't like to do it when we go camping. Little Ashley had a thing about it, often requiring a detour to a real bathroom somewhere. The thought of her being forced to relieve herself out here in front of a stranger, a malicious one at that, sickened me. I wrapped my arms around her.
We'll find her, babe. Don't worry.
But even as I said it, a part of me feared the worst. Chapter 6 Shane's face and chest hurt. Niagata had been repeatedly slapping them in turn. The skin on his chest was now bright red, as was his face. Niagata had paused the assault. One of his gloves had ripped.
You can't do this shit to me! I'm an American citizen! Shane shouted,
his face stinging as he yelled. Niagata turned, smiling.
So you are.
But you are also now classified as an enemy combatant, which means I can do what I want to you.
Enemy combatant? We were defending ourselves. You people opened fire on us without warning.
Let's not quibble over the details, Niagata said, delivering a savage slap to the right side of Shane's head. He slowly turned back to face Niagata.
Fuck you.
In his pain, Shane hadn't noticed the object in Niagata's right hand. Niagata brought the stun baton up quickly, jamming it into Shane's neck and triggering it. The 100,000 volts caused his body to convulse and jerk in the chair as a long, loud moan escaped him. When Niagata finally let off, Shane's body went limp, his head hung on his chest.
Now, where were we? Ah, yes, your meeting. What was the purpose of it?
Shane's head rocked back and forth.
I told you, we were just riding around and ran into them.
Niagata stuck the end of the baton under Shane's chin and raised his face. No one just goes out for a ride these days. Fuel is precious, and the fact alone that you have a running vehicle and fuel says a lot about you. Now, who did you meet with? There's nothing to tell,
Shane yelled. If you were just out for a ride, as you say, then why were you armed? Under martial law, you are not supposed to have weapons.
Come on! Everyone's armed! Shane exclaimed.
I can see this is going to require a little more effort. You may be telling the truth, or you may not, but we'll find out.
Niagata took the gloves off and tossed them on the table. Shane heard the door open. Niagata spoke to someone, then returned with two other men. The hood was once again pulled over his head, and the two men set about removing the restraints that secured him to the chair and reapplying the ones he'd worn coming into this torture session. Once he was secured, the men pulled him to his feet and led him toward the door. Shane was thankful to be getting away from Niagata, though he didn't know what would happen next. Once outside, the sun's rays warmed his entire body. This reminded him that he was still naked, being trotted around the camp with just a hood. He was led back into the building containing the cells. He could tell it was the same one from the smell. A cell door was opened, and he was let in. The cuffs were disconnected from the waist chain, and his arms lifted over his head as a clicking sound filled the room. Before he realized what was going on, his arms were pulled high over his head. Then the clicking changed in pitch as he was lifted to the balls of his feet. He was barely supporting any of his weight with his legs, and his wrists ached.
"What the fuck?" Shane shouted.
"Here, this'll make you feel better," a voice said, a second before he was hit with a bucket of water. The water was so cold it caused Shane to yelp. Reflexively, he tried to turn his body, but before he could even react, he was hit with more water. The door was slammed shut, and one of the men said, "We'll be back." Shane pictured how he must look. Cold, wet, naked, hanging like a side of beef. He began to shiver. The building was cold to begin with, but now that he was naked and wet, Shane knew he was about to experience a level of cold he'd never known existed. Kay was busy in the kitchen, humming to herself. The next lunch service would start in 20 minutes. She was stirring a large pot of red beans and rice and thinking of the girls. She was worried about them, and whatever cruel fate they were experiencing in detention. She had heard rumors about what happened there, but she didn't even want to think of what those three were going through given the crime they'd committed. She smiled, thinking about how they would banter in the kitchen. Those girls had been different from most of the other women who worked for her, and she really cared for them. But there was nothing she could do for them now. Any attempt to help would land her in detention with them. Kate tilted the big pot and started raking the beans and rice out into a serving pan. As she carried the pan to the dining area, she was greeted by the usual racket from the crowd. Kay set the pan in the warmer and turned back to the kitchen. Before she made it through the door, someone called out to her.
"Hey, Kay!"
She stopped with one hand on the door to the kitchen and looked back.
"Oh, hi, Eric."
Eric approached and nodded for her to go into the kitchen. He followed her in, then motioned for her to go to the dry storage room. Kay led the way. He took a look around the kitchen and closed the door behind them.
"Is everything all right?"
Kay asked, with concern in her voice. Eric turned to face her.
"Oh, yeah, everything's okay. I just wanted to talk to you in private."
"About what?"
"Fred and the other girls. Have you heard anything about them?"
"Oh, no, I'm the last person who would find out about them. You'd probably know something before I would," Kay said.
"Well, you know how it is. Everyone around here seems to have a source of their own. I was just hoping you'd heard something."
"No, I'm sorry," Kay said, lowering her eyes to the floor. "I wish I knew something. I'm so worried about them."
"Tell me about it."
I know they did what they were accused of, but I also know he deserved it, Eric said, running a hand through his hair. Kay looked up at him and grabbed his arm. Her eyes were pleading.
Then why don't you say something? They'll believe you. You're one of them.
They wouldn't listen to me. If I said anything, it'd go badly for me, and I don't want to end up where they are. It wouldn't help at all.
They wouldn't do that to you, Kay protested.
Eric shook his head. You're right. They might just kill me. Eric could tell from the look in her eyes that Kay didn't believe that.
These people don't play around, Kay. Believe me.
Kay nodded in understanding, thinking about some of the cruelty she had witnessed.
You're probably right.
Without thinking about it, Eric reached out and hugged the old woman. It surprised him nearly as much as it did her. After a pause, Kay wrapped her arms around him. Aside from the girls, Kay hadn't hugged anyone since her husband had died. And in the before, her husband was one of few people she ever showed affection to, for that matter. Eric was the same way. He'd never been a very affectionate person. Hugs and saying I love you were not very common in his house growing up. But in this moment, they needed each other's comfort.
Thanks, Kay, Eric said,